Routine supper. I always recommend throwing in a bottle of champagne as the clincher. For the French, the sex appeal of eating is second nature. Perhaps this is why so many erotic blandishments refer to food. I grew up hearing the entire repertoire of edible endearments. Mon petit canard, my little duck, mon chou, cabbage, ma tourterelle, dove, ma caille, quail. Une amoureuse rigolote. Sex itself is a great anti-aging formula with no side effects. It has cardiovascular benefits and increases the production of hormones that diminish stress and improve mood. A good mood is the right state in which to enjoy all pleasures properly, especially food. The right frame of mind is vital to contentment, diminishing the urge for excess. But even more than sex, being in love is good for you. Gauguin, in Tahiti, created a wood relief he entitled Soyez amoureuse pour être heureuse. To be happy, be in love. Not a bad recipe. Perhaps this sounds to you like one of those easier said than done prescriptions, on a par with eat right and exercise. Nevertheless, I observe many women failing to embrace love as pleasure. Relationships and marriage can be pursued with the same grim determination that some bring to their careers. There's even been a recent book about applying MBA training to finding a husband. Romance is not a science, but an art, no less so than the art of eating well. And it takes cultivation and refinement if a relationship is to offer its fullest rewards. In love, we blend versatility with constancy, the stiff and the supple, the excitement of glamour with the pleasure of comfort. Contrasts and surprises that keep love as well as food interesting. And we are not careless with our investments, as usual, favoring quality over quantity. True love depends on truly knowing someone, and getting to know someone takes a very long while, often a lifetime. Perhaps this is why French women are better than any others I know at preserving spark and mystery, even after 10, 20, or more years of cohabitation. It's worth the money and effort. I am always reminded of Louis Aragon, who said, in what is probably my favorite love poem, Il n'y a pas d'amour heureux, mais c'est notre amour à tous deux, which translates loosely as, there is no happy love, but the love of us two. Nothing promotes the continued spontaneity of love like laughter. French women dream of finding un amoureux rigolo, a love who is funny, makes us laugh. The old wisdom that laughter keeps us young finds empirical support in the fact that a 4-year-old laughs about 500 times a day, while for the average adult, it's only 15. If that's your idea of growing up, you can keep it. The French woman understands intuitively that one does not laugh because one is happy. One is happy because one laughs. It's both a physical and psychic pleasure. It is relaxing, stimulating, liberating, and sensual. It's a pleasant response to emotion that heightens the emotion itself. The physical act of laughing stimulates the production of hormones that elevate mood. It's also a form of internal calisthenic that improves blood circulation and, yes, does burn more calories than sitting glumly. Laughs are like wild mushrooms. They don't deliver themselves to you. You have to go in search of them, whether by pursuing the unexpected or by being totally crazy. Denk is the word we use to keep the adventure of living adventurous. Whether in friendship or in romance, one shouldn't sit around waiting to be entertained. Take the initiative and make a rendezvous with someone whose company you enjoy. Don't let a busy life or electronic communication gadgets be your excuse for excess solitude. It's a talent, but a rare one, to be able to make yourself laugh. Years ago, Edward's mother, who, lucky for me, adores me, was much relieved when he finally proposed. But she knew for certain we'd remain together when later she'd ask him how it was going, and Edward would say, "She makes me laugh." In fact, at holiday meals, I enjoy making his entire family laugh. Over the years, we've laughed a lot. And when I ask him, "Do you still love me?" he always answers, "As long as you make me laugh." I make sure I do. Dr. Miracle was first to tell me, "Tout est une question d'attitude." Everything's a matter of attitude. The great Provençal writer Marcel Pagnol believed that God gave laughter to human beings as consolation for being intelligent. I prefer to believe he made us intelligent so we could appreciate a good laugh. 12. Life stages. Reaching and maintaining equilibrium is not done by force of heredity. It's something we cultivate through the way we live. Genetics plays a part, of course, and balance certainly does seem easier for some. But looks can be deceiving. Some may actually mask unhealthy habits. Consider the proverbial model, who eats nothing but burgers and pizza, yet doesn't gain an ounce. Genetics may be protecting her insides, for now, from this assault, if not from our envious glares. But just as likely, such a woman may in fact be less well than one who must pay much more attention to what she consumes, how much she moves, and so forth. Genetic predisposition to slenderness is not, as I have said, disproportionately distributed among French women. Most who appear to live in healthy balance are actually working at it. But that work has been made infinitely easier by wise cultural conditioning and practice. Unfortunately for all women, see under life, unfairness of, the equilibrium we work to achieve shifts as we age. If we don't continue paying close attention to our bodies, our healthy balance will be pulled out from under us. But despair not. Attention and incremental adjustment throughout life are easier than big corrections following long intervals of imbalance. Alertness and rapid response can allow us to enjoy a long life of pleasures while never getting fat. Still, it does happen. We can be eating well and staying active for years when, bang, force majeure. This is true for all humans, but especially for women, whose weight and silhouette can be radically altered by three major physiological and psychological events in which hormones run amok: adolescence, pregnancy, and menopause. All three present a serious potential for troublesome weight gain, and it's better to plan for them than to eat first and ask questions later. But let's begin at the beginning. Birth to age 7. While this could hardly be mistaken for a child care book, common sense tells us that habits acquired young are the hardest to break. Take advantage of the last moment when you have complete control over what your child consumes. As children, we develop our lifelong sense of what is natural and comforting, and the adult continues to seek comfort from the same sources, regardless of how unhealthful. You needn't read the complete Proust to figure this out. The best gift you can give a child is a conditioned attraction to the things that are good for her. First and foremost, this means water. Beware of dehydration among infants. The critical period is the first 2 years, especially the first 6 months. A baby's body is 65% to 80% water versus 60% for an adult. Without plenty of water, a baby, especially one kept too warm, can dehydrate in as little as 3 hours, a problem only exacerbated by the common infant problems of vomiting and diarrhea. When a baby refuses to drink, sleeps too much, is sluggish, has a gray complexion, or breathes too fast, it's time to get oral rehydration salts at the pharmacy. Don't let things get that far. Make sure your infant is well hydrated. Baby food is usually rich in water, but the taste for water by itself won't develop naturally if you limit a baby's liquids to juice and milk. Perhaps the questionable preference for caloric liquids over water starts here. Eating well is something that needs to be taught early, but as everyone knows, a baby's palate is no more well-developed than its teeth. Don't try to start too early with intense flavors and turn your baby off. By the time a child is 3 years old, however, French mothers start cultivating good taste. Especially in the Western world, children have many noxious eating temptations, foods chemically treated to trick our evolutionary programming into believing they are good eats. You may need to fight fire with fire, fooling kids, as I was fooled, into eating what is good until they can appreciate for themselves. Americans seem less inclined to do this than they were 50 years ago. They seem to believe any form of deceit in child-rearing will lead to trauma. This is nonsense. There's nothing wrong with fooling kids into learning which foods are good and which are not to be abused. Take time to develop some games that make this easier. When I was a girl, my father would come home for lunch, as most workers and school children did in those days, and we would play pelle la pomme, peel the apple. My mother didn't like the skins, so my father was assigned the peeling, which we watched him do with wonderful dexterity as we spoke about the morning's goings-on. Nutrition should be taught at school, but too often it is not, and by then it can be harder to change habits ingrained by supermarkets and fast food chains and virtually everything on television. Mostly they are selling not healthy eating, but products supposed to be edible, a term I use advisedly. Few are selling naturally good food. I was amazed as an exchange student in Weston, Massachusetts, to discover frozen dinners. Now many of them even carry claims of being healthy options. A meal that can be packed and frozen and thawed is nothing you should desire, much less teach your kids to want. In France, where globalization has only started to precipitate a previously unimaginable obesity wave among small kids, a nationwide school program of nutritional awareness has been implemented. Big government has its uses. It also helps that there is not nearly as much variety on television, and TV plays a much smaller role in the average French child's life, sparing her the roughly 10,000 food ads the average American child sees annually. Food on television makes one think about eating and gets one's gastric juices flowing, triggering the release of insulin, lowering one's blood sugar, and stimulating food cravings. It's gastronomic pornography. Here are some basic rules your kids will thank you for when they become adults who aren't fat. Get your children used to drinking water straight, not juice or fruit-like drinks or soda as their thirst quencher. As in adults, thirst is a faulty indicator of proper hydration, kicking in only when the tank is way too low. Kids should learn to pay attention to their urine. If it's not pale and clear, more water is needed. Now is the time to learn the meaning of three meals a day and sensible portions. A hungry child's eyes can be bigger than her stomach, as we say. Some kids just can't bear food in the morning, but the French agree with most experts that classroom attention and learning are markedly improved by a real breakfast. Making sure your kids eat at regular intervals will reduce the menace of snacking, which usually means junk to kids left to their own devices. Teach your children the rituals of civilized eating by setting a good example. Don't eat in front of the TV if you don't want them to. Dinner is a ritual. Table conversation is an art, even if it amounts to playing mange ta soupe as our Nounou Yvette did. Expose them to the widest variety of vegetables and fruits, showing them how good things can be in season. Tasteless fruits and vegetables won't win them over for life. Learn to use treats. There is nothing wrong with the old custom of rewarding good eating, whether in adults or in children. But never use junk as a reward. And try to instill low sugar tolerance. A dessert doesn't have to be super sweet to be a treat. Try a tarte aux fruits. Most kids' cereals have more sugar than a French pastry. Avoid them like the plague. I wonder how many children on behavior-modifying pharmaceuticals are merely sugar junkies. Don't stock bad foods out of convenience, but always have something to snack on. Kids love tangerines, grapes. Did you know raw fennel makes a great snack food? Get them involved in food preparation, looking, smelling, and tasting ingredients. What you're doing in the kitchen shouldn't be a mystery to them. Take them to food markets, gardens, and farms where they can pick fruit. Don't be a permissive parent. Fear that their kids won't like them has terrorized lots of Americans. The French are more traditional in child rearing and accept that children benefit from structure and strictures. Get your kids moving. Apart from those committed to sports lessons and teams, exertion for many American kids has been reduced to the virtual kind of the PlayStation. Fine for hand-eye coordination, but no substitute for the real thing. Kids have much more energy than adults. Without proper outlets, emotional problems, including overeating, can result. In Europe, you see kids playing outside till dinner, as they used to in America in the days before the obesity epidemic. Remember, children imitate their parents, so practice good manners and habits for wellness. Also remember that prevention in all things starts in childhood. Ages 7 to 17. Above all, getting enough calcium is critical during this period, when 40 to 50% of the definitive bone capital is constituted. Be on the alert. Many girls avoid dairy products because they view them as fattening. This is a big mistake. Yogurt and cheese should be eaten regularly. Now is also the time when girls learn their taste for coffee and sodas, sugar and caffeine, so encourage moderation. A few more rules and suggestions for the formative years, when weight may become an issue for the first time in our lives. Some teenage girls are drawn to vegetarianism nowadays, which has both advantages and liabilities. It's not to be discouraged, as long as proteins, especially dairy, are consumed. But if your kids are carnivores, like most French children, it's a good time to establish the principle that one should have meat only 2 to 3 times a week. Teach them the pleasures of seafood in various forms. Nowadays, some kids love sushi, which wasn't an option when I was growing up. Start teaching them how to cook simple dishes. The sooner the better. Connection to preparing one's food is the French woman's lifeline to healthy eating. So is cleaning up. Movement. Don't trust school athletic programs as the only source of exertion. Half the gym class can be wasted suiting up and taking attendance. If your kid is an athlete, that's great. But if not, sitting around until dinner is not an option. Chores, volunteer work, and many other activities build character and burn calories. Don't run a hotel for your kids. Make sure they pick up after themselves. Now is the time to grow up respecting our liquid assets. 8 to 10 glasses of water a day may be an easier sell when you explain the benefits in weight control and keeping the complexion clear. They'll need even more if they sneak salty snack foods. I also recommend that parents be the first to serve alcohol, preferably in the form of wine and water, to kids, and teach them respectful use. This is not something they should be prowling around to obtain behind your back. In general, bodies still developing need to eat a bit of everything. For perfect nutrition, children and teenagers should really be having about 20 different foods a day. Well, we must do what we can. If there is difficulty with meat or fish, there are plenty of ways to fool the wary youngster, from rolling prunes in veal or turkey scallopini, to hiding veggies in an omelet and serving fish dipped in an egg batter and cooked in a nonstick pan. Barter once in a while. On Wednesdays, my parents often served bifteck de cheval, horse steak, which I loathed mostly for sentimental reasons, though the meat is actually quite tasty. It was always followed with a small surprise dessert. So I ate my horse. The increase in body fat that accompanies adolescence generally falls in the middle of the 7 to 17 period. It's time for every young woman, French or otherwise, to get some counsel from a family doctor or even a gynecologist. Professionals can confirm with more credibility that a bit of weight gain is natural and healthy. Proper menstrual function depends on fat reserves. In thin girls, puberty is often delayed. In not-so-thin girls, it can be precocious. But if weight problems do occur, the most important countermeasure is the 3-meals-a-day system. There is no surer ballast for physical and mental well-being at this time. Girls who have had the golden rules of proper nutrition programmed into them will be better able to fend for themselves when they leave the nest. Ages 17 to 35. For many, the 20s seem like the time of infinite possibility, although in retrospect, a woman will always idealize her 30s. Late teens and early 20s are inevitably a tough transition, as they were for me. College, starting a career, even a family. This great stress comes just as we have already exhausted everyone's patience with teenage angst. I've met countless women in their 20s suffering weight problems because of not yet having grown into adult habits of eating, drinking, and moving. It's particularly painful to see them suckered by unsustainable diets, to which faith in technology, common in today's youth, appears to make them especially vulnerable. A little fuzzy science is a dangerous thing. They also tend to want results timed to social events, of which there are many for the predominantly single demographic. So the idea of 10 pounds in 2 weeks is extremely seductive. Making matters worse, most haven't learned anything about cooking. If this is you, I recommend the French woman's Full Monty, a month of nutritional inventory, magical leek soup, short and long-term recasting. Now is the time to get serious about putting away childish things. The freedom most enjoy during the 17 to 35 period can also invite seemingly grown-up excesses, rich meals out for business and adult courtship rituals, and especially excess alcohol consumption among the freshly legal and unsupervised. For this demographic, most overeating occurs after 8 p.m., when you should be most on guard. It's important to develop hunger pacifiers for the times leading up to lunch and dinner and the twilight zone before bed. Muscle mass and bone density should be at their peak. Ironically, though, now is the time when most of us fall into a destructive, sedentary lifestyle, fostered by the fact that more and more jobs require us to sit at a desk all day for the first time in our lives. The habits of movement, the principle of faire les 100 pas, can be a help here, though the girl in us still wants to blast away her sins in Stairmaster marathons. Eventually, this gets too boring or exhausting, and the roof caves in on her precarious equilibrium. The sooner you learn the French woman's incremental approach, the easier and more pleasurable will be the rest of your life. Try to transform exercise time into entertainment. Look for activities and exertions that amuse you, especially if you can do them with friends. There are 1,000 stops on the road from triathlete to couch potato. It is an absolute must to start walking at least 30 minutes a day during these years. Swimming and yoga are also wonderful if you have the inclination. But in any case, you must not let attention to muscle tone and flexibility go until the next stage, when they will be much harder to recover. Ditto metabolism, which naturally declines beginning as early as 25. For pregnant women, fat accumulation is natural and tends to occur mainly in the first months to build the body's reserves for breastfeeding. The risk of postpartum weight problems is much greater if you are slightly overweight before you become pregnant. So before you start managing an equilibrium for two, it's a good idea to get your own in order. Don't fall back on inevitability theory. What's the use? In 3 months, I'll be big as a house anyway. Breastfeeding is good for the baby, but it's also good for the mother, putting the fat reserves to their intended use for milk production. A month of breastfeeding can do wonders trimming the silhouette, especially below the waist, reducing what we call culottes de cheval, riding breeches or saddlebags. Losing those pregnancy thighs is a true obsession with French women. The exertions of motherhood can be a great help if you manage the stress sensibly. Here are some rules to live by as soon as you are running your own show, with or without others. Don't watch yourself become a Botero sculpture. React. A little initiative and discipline go a long way. Now that you are making choices as an adult for the first time, make sure they are adult choices. The rules you violate are no longer your mother's, and it's no longer simply a matter of not getting caught. Career progress, marriage, and motherhood can be particular stress factors in these years. Mistakes, doubts, and failures are bound to befall you. The best defense is learning to savor les petits bonheurs, all the little things that make each day a miracle, be it a sunrise on your way to work, a flowering bush in bloom, or an unexpected smile from a stranger. In facing challenges, aim to be the master, not the subject, of your life. Choice and risk are intertwined. All roads to success run through such an awareness. Keep dreaming intensely. Too many of us stop at this stage, but seize the day as well. How you learn to live now will set the stage for the rest of your life. Sources of fatigue and tension will multiply. Combat them with physical activities, not cocktails. Discover new forms of movement, yoga, dance, golf, tennis, or anything that appeals to you. But don't neglect walking and stair climbing. Tanning booth? No. Sunglasses and sunscreen? Yes. Think ahead. Better pale today than Botoxed tomorrow. Your metabolism is as high as it will ever be. Enjoy it, and don't be afraid to try new foods, but don't neglect fresh fruits and vegetables in season. Start paying attention to ingredients and what you are putting into your body. Even if you don't plan to be a chef, a cooking class can be fun and change your relationship to food for the better. Ages 35 to 55. Not older but wiser is a hollow consolation only for those who expect it to be. French women are proverbially and in fact at their peak in these years. We truly believe it. You can too. If you have cultivated well-being up to this point, you are primed to reap to full advantage the experience and awareness of your pleasures, including food and sex. At the same time, as you must know, there are agents provocateurs conspiring against your hard-won equilibrium, including greater responsibilities of work and family. This may be the time for caring for both parents and children, a big squeeze. Gone is much of our free time. Even worse, we face a relatively rapid decline in metabolism. French women recognize this time as both peak and crunch, and the great majority do not surrender. Denied youth's seemingly infinite forgiveness, you now face the moment when lack of real commitment to healthy eating and living will show. It is no time for what mass-marketed diet programs offer. Even if you lose weight, you'll gain wrinkles and look gaunter as tissue loosens with rapid water loss, and sleep beckons as never before. Remember when you could stay out all night and still go to work looking okay? Adieu to all that. Sleep deprivation shows big time in this stage and becomes a major contributor to weight gain. Just accept that the days of burning the candle at both ends with impunity are over. Beginning at 35, think in terms of a rule of 7. With every 7 years hereafter, your body is changing enough to require an inventory and overhaul of habits. Don't wait for round number birthdays, which can often induce paralysis and trauma just when everyone is watching. At 35, metabolism begins its slowdown, and you can't eat as you did in your 20s. If typical, you will start trading a half pound of muscle for a half pound of fat every year. At 42, hormone levels begin to drop until menopause at, say, 49, when the serious loss of bone density also begins. For this reason, now is the time French women, lifelong walkers, also pick up weights. Resistance training is the surest way to reverse the muscle-to-fat trade-off that more than anything sets the 20-somethings apart from their elders. It also retards bone loss and the slowdown in metabolism. Remember, muscle burns more calories than other tissue types, even at rest. Now, you don't want to overdo it, as Colette unfortunately did. Start out with 3 to 5 pound weights and favor slow movements controlled by your muscles through the full range of motion. Momentum does not tone your body. Tone comes from slowly controlled reps. Muscle bulk comes only from more serious weights. If you discover the gym as something you can enjoy, never a necessity if you stick to small weights, safe at any speed, and keep up your walking and multiplying your little exertions, engage a trainer for at least a session or two. As I still detest gyms, I have no advice on the ever more complicated devices they offer. They look like weapons systems. While you treat the upper body with free weights, do morning sit-ups for the midsection. Do them religiously. And for the legs, I have but one word: stairs. One mustn't underestimate the profound psychological and emotional impact of these years, especially if they include the very common traumas of divorce or losing a parent. It's a stage when thoughts inevitably turn to our own mortality, too. Either you can become morose, or you can apply your heightened awareness to cultivating pleasures. I don't have to tell you which French women choose. Having outgrown the youthful demand for immediate gratification puts you at an advantage for losing weight like a French woman. Also, having tried many things by this age, you know better than ever what delights and what doesn't. No one can appreciate little things as much as someone who has done a little living. But you can't ignore the debit column. The demands, even the reversals of fortune, may push you toward the zero degree of pleasures. Don't go there. If you can't name your pleasures, chances are you've surrendered too many of them. It's time to start cultivating. For me, these years saw the introduction of new types of food. I now love soy nuts, whole soybeans roasted to a crunchy texture and nutty flavor. There has also been a slight decrease in portions and frequency of certain known offenders. I've reduced my chocolate fix from daily to perhaps 3 times a week, and I also eat red meat less often. But doing it gradually, one doesn't notice a pinch. It's been during these years, too, that I have added the 15 flights of stairs a few times a week to my scheduled walk. For me, those 20 minutes a day have been key to holding my ground. Dr. Miracle advised that if you look healthy at 20, that's more or less the weight you should keep for the rest of your life. Here are the basics for making that perfectly reasonable goal a reality. Increase your proportion of fruits and vegetables as compared with other food types, especially fatty and sugary ones, which you should aim to reduce anyway if you consume them frequently. Even a sweet tooth will re-equilibrate if conditioned slowly. Practice less is more aggressively, avoiding meaningless calories and saving them for real pleasures. Enjoy them with attention. Try to pay more attention to the rhythms of your life, daily, weekly, monthly. Bring a mental dimension to your physical movement. Awareness reduces stress and promotes a feeling of well-being. Practice more controlled breathing. Carry water everywhere you go, and increase your intake to at least 2 quarts a day. Start taking a multivitamin with food. Learn to say no, with an eye to saying yes to something else. Build small rest periods into your day. I used to go to parties and dinners straight from work. Now I go home beforehand, take a shower, and do a few minutes of meditation. Result, I face the evening with renewed energy. Take a breather at your desk. Eyes closed and controlled breathing. Try to find new interests. Life seems fuller with novelties, and too many women depend on interests of their youth to see them through their middle years. Yesteryear's novelties may be today's rut. Relatively few of your possible activities have been closed to you on account of age. Curiosity, no less than openness to pleasure, is not the exclusive property of the young. Your skin will get drier and lose some of its elasticity, but you don't need surgery or stem cell therapy. You do need plenty of moisturizer and some sunscreen, even on days the sun doesn't shine. Many French women, myself included, wear dark glasses whenever outdoors. It prevents fine lines while enhancing our mystery. Ages 55 to 77 plus. With increased life expectancies, this stage, dismissed as old age just a few decades ago, is now for many one of the most vital times of life. Better late than never. Well-being, while not rare, is more fragile in these years, when health problems that might roll off a younger woman's back can have much more serious effects. For this reason, pampering oneself is important. You must acknowledge the positive form of selfishness, which is not self-absorption, but a more refined and serene attentiveness to needs, comforts, and now limitations of the body. After 50, most women have the good fortune of clearly recognizing the things they truly care about. It's a time in life when we focus on those things, improve our lives through simplification, and get real about the things to be let go. In some ways, it's when we learn to say no, not out of self-denial, but because we know better. The mind is never a stronger ally in wellness. Take it easy. This does not mean spending the rest of your days in sweats. It is the time to be not négligé, in the sense of negligent rather than underwear, but soigné, elegant and groomed. This time can be full of pleasure, but graceful aging requires some sensible renouncements. In a society obsessed with youth, always has been, but it used to be 20-year-olds, not preteens, that's not always easy and will require all the resources of self-awareness you have cultivated. Aging can be a crisis for any woman, but those who do it well are those who end up accepting it as natural. Mourning youth is perfectly natural too, but some, like Hamlet, mourn too long. Acceptance is rewarded with the realization that life can go on wonderfully well. The well-tempered mind is what saves us from dwelling too much on the past, regret and loss, or the future, no longer unlimited. The same mind and breathing exercises that we use to regulate proper eating help us concentrate on the moment and living properly. These years must be taken a day at a time. Every day is a bonus. With acceptance of one's age and time remaining come gifts, a wise reluctance to waste little moments of happiness whose preciousness the young often fritter, peace of mind that comes with tolerance, and patience with and less resentment of the world. If you do it right, time, which might seem an enemy, will seem more an illusion. Physically, the worst offense is trying to be un vieille qui veut faire jeune, an older woman who decks herself out like a young thing. Miniskirts, bikinis, too much makeup. They are not unheard of in France, where occasionally the well-preserved fall prey to the temptation of flaunting it. But there's nothing lovely about a 70-year-old woman at the market in short shorts, no matter how great her legs are. Modesty is de rigueur, the more impractical it becomes to conceal one's age. At that point, being natural is the best revenge. Surgery and rouge pots suggest one is not bien dans sa peau, which, as we say, is the essence of a French woman's mystique. The French rightly acknowledge there is a particular mystique to une femme d'un certain âge, an expression with layers of meaning, including respect, but also worldliness and hints of seduction. Our media have no trouble projecting the sexiness of Catherine Deneuve and Charlotte Rampling. Here, the difference between France and America is amazing. In Europe, men naturally find women of this age group desirable, even sexy, and are often caught turning around to look at one entering a restaurant. If she is eating alone, they are more likely to flirt with her than pity her. It's inconceivable in New York, where eye contact seems to have gone the way of smoking. If you are alert, aging seems to present you with its own common sense instructions. But here are some adjustments to consider. Practice some routine physical exertion all your life, and you'll be in better shape to continue. But if you haven't, it truly is never too late to start. And the little stroll, which may have seemed a trivial improvement to your younger self, may seem more a life-affirming ritual, a reliable daily accomplishment. Revisit your food selection and revise again in favor of more fruits and vegetables. Have fruit, especially berries, at least twice a day in season. Try to keep meat to once a week and fish to twice a week. Eggs are fine, but no more than one a day. Have lentils, green vegetables, and salads, potatoes, avoid mashed and fries, brown rice, and, bien sûr, a glass or two of wine a day. Keep eating yogurt religiously. Meals and portions tend to get smaller automatically as the older body reaches satiety faster. Sometimes the problem is eating not too much, but too little, and suffering deficiencies. When one is having meat and fish, 4 to 6 ounces is sufficient for good nutrition, and even 3 is fine. Use your little scale to recalibrate your ideas of portion size. Adding the afternoon goûter is a good idea. A simple flan is a good source of protein and calcium. In fact, you may want to out-French the French and consider 5 smaller meals instead of 3 standard size ones. Because their taste buds are no longer as sharp, seniors grow bored with their foods more quickly. It makes more sense to eat smaller portions than to force feed a diet more appropriate for a younger woman, as sometimes happens. Be attentive to how easily you digest. Rich desserts may no longer like you as much as you like them. Reserve them for special occasions and have little portions. Lubricate skin morning and night. Don't forget your hands. Moisturize after every wash. Old-fashioned Vaseline intensive care lotion is fine. No need for outrageously expensive creams with genetically engineered ingredients. Another remarkably therapeutic change. Add 1 tablespoon of walnut oil to your daily diet. Studies have suggested benefits for mood, blood flow, and heart rhythm. And it's also an anti-inflammatory. This would have interested my relatives in Provence, who recognize this stuff as a magic potion. They used walnut and hazelnut oils frequently, but sparingly, they're expensive, on salads throughout life. Both are also wonderful new flavors if you haven't tried them. Water, water, water. I know I am harping, but when one has experienced 80 years of living, hydration is a life and death matter. When my mother reached her 90s, her doctor, not Dr. Miracle, alas, but of the same school, reminded me that at her stage, the 2 greatest dangers can be dehydration and sudden weight loss. Je n'ai pas soif, I'm not thirsty, is a common refrain among the elderly, but following his instructions, she emptied 1 glass every 3 hours. 12. B. The plan for life. Leslie, a friend from New York who loves to visit Paris, joined me for dinner recently at a luscious restaurant in the Rue de Grand Augustin, just by the Seine. As she picked at her meal, watching me eat all of mine, she told me about her lunch that afternoon. She and another American friend had been shopping till they dropped, on the fashionable Faubourg Saint-Honoré, and stopped for lunch at a trendy little bistro in the Rue Matignon. 2 typically done Parisian women, trimly coutured, sat at the next table. Leslie's friend said, "Watch this," confident that the 2 would order mesclun and Evian, having only Gauloise for the rest of lunch. Leslie was impressed to see her friend proved wrong when the ladies, non-smokers apparently, ordered appetizers, main courses, and wine. But the Americans were floored when the French ladies tucked into an order of profiterole for dessert while Leslie and her friend were settling their bill for the 1-course lunch. "Oh, well, it's genetic," her friend sniped finally. No, it isn't. And you can be sure that those French ladies, intently enjoying the pleasures of a full meal on a beautiful day, were doing so entirely mindful of a compensation that would be made that evening or the next day. C'est la vie. With all due respect to Watson and Crick, the capacity to enjoy food and not get fat is available to the great majority not blessed with special DNA. In fact, there are far fewer naturally tall or thin women in France than in California, Texas, or Sweden, for that matter. The real reason French women don't get fat is not genetic, but cultural. And if the French subjected themselves to the American extremes of eating and dieting, the obesity problem in France would be much worse than what has struck America. With our relatively small frames, we'd be a nation of 5x5s rolling along the boulevards, and, given my job, I would be out in front. There is a French paradox that extends far beyond the capacity to enjoy wine and cheese while preserving a healthy heart. Really, As with all paradoxes, the contradiction is only an impression that conceals a perfectly logical truth. French women don't get fat because they have not allowed new attitudes and modern theories of how the body uses food to overrule centuries of experience. They see no contradiction in eating bread and chocolate, having a bit of wine and so on, and remaining not only slender but healthy. They do, however, understand that each of us is the keeper of her own balance, and when that balance slips, each must devise her own plan of correction based on personal preferences. Ordinarily, the French are not ones to let a loss of balance get too far out of hand. Excess is typically a matter of a couple of days, which can be corrected in a couple of days to follow. If you plan your eating pleasures and compensations on a weekly basis, it's hard to stray too far. American women I know tend to get defeated by lapses. Oh well, I've blown the diet, might as well go for broke. A basic failure of logic. We're all human. We all stray and return. French women do it too. They simply understand better than others how to make amends. Sometimes even French women gain more weight than can be offset by a week of compensations. We too go through puberty, pregnancy, menopause, all the familiar equilibrium busters. The difference is in how we respond. The answer is never dieting in the American sense, but rather little alterations made steadily over time. So when we do lose the excess weight, not only does the effort seem painless, the results are much more likely to last. If my fellow Americans could adopt even a fraction of the French attitude about food and life, don't worry, you don't have to sign on to the politics, too. Managing weight would cease to be a terror, an obsession, and reveal its true nature as part of the art of living. I wouldn't be honest if I didn't confess to knowing a French woman or two who was fat all her life. We had a great family friend called Yvonne, who reveled in food and wine more than almost anyone else I've known. What excitement it was, both vicarious and actual, to share a meal with her, which I did many times before her death some years ago at the age of 84. Yvonne knew she was not svelte, but her shape did not develop from a loss of control. Particularly after 80, she simply had learned to derive so much genuine pleasure from food and drink, such a sense of vitality, that the payoff of typical compensations didn't measure up in her mind. It wasn't that she was always gaining weight. She had, of her own free will, set her equilibrium higher than that of most women, and she loved every day of her life. She was unusual in body, but in her spirit, she could not have been more French. My strategy with this book has also been unapologetically French. Essayistic, bien sûr, but incremental, too. I've tried to expose the reader bit by bit to the secrets of why French women, with rare exceptions, don't get fat. Unlike a book about diet, mine does not allow you to open to a color-coded graphic, do A, B, C, D, and get immediately to work. Really, that's part of the point. You could speed-read your way through Madame Bovary, picking up plot, characters, and setting, but the only way to absorb the book's insights is to surrender to the narrative, allowing that you may not see everything on the first attempt. Developing a program that will serve you a lifetime is not an instant fix. Attitude shifts take much longer, but when they tend to take for good. It would be contrary to French sensibilities to attempt to summarize or reduce a whole philosophy to a set of discrete principles. Any real design for living is more than the sum of its parts. But I'm an American, too, and being a CEO, have a particular weakness for bullets and PowerPoints. Besides, what book could call itself French if it didn't at least flirt with deconstructing itself? So, with careful appreciation for the slipperiness of generalizations, the American in me feels compelled to observe that French women typically think about good things to eat, American women typically worry about bad things to eat. French women eat smaller portions of more things. American women eat larger portions of fewer things. French women eat more vegetables. French women eat a lot more fruit. French women love bread and would never consider a life without carbs. French women don't eat fat-free, sugar-free, or anything artificially stripped of natural flavor. They go for the real thing, in moderation. French women love chocolate, especially the dark, slightly bitter, silky stuff with its nutty aroma. French women eat with all five senses, allowing less to seem like more. French women balance their food, drink, and movement on a week-by-week basis. French women do stray, but they always come back, believing there are only detours and no dead ends. French women don't often weigh themselves, preferring to keep track with their hands, eyes, and clothes, zipper syndrome. French women eat 3 meals a day. French women don't snack all the time. French women never let themselves be hungry. French women never let themselves feel stuffed. French women train their taste buds and those of their young from an early age. French women honor mealtime rituals and never eat standing up or on the run, or in front of the TV. French women don't watch much TV. French women don't have much TV to watch. French women eat and serve what's in season for maximum flavor and value, and no availability does not equal quality. French women love to discover new flavors and are always experimenting with herbs, spices, and citrus juices to make a familiar dish seem new. French women eschew extreme temperatures in what they consume and enjoy fruits and vegetables bursting with flavor at room temperature, at which they prefer their water, too. French women don't care for hard liquor. French women do enjoy wine regularly, but with meals and only a glass, or maybe two. French women get a kick from champagne as an aperitif or with food and don't need a special occasion to open a bottle. French women drink water all day long. French women choose their own indulgences and compensations. They understand that little things count, both additions and subtractions, and that as an adult, everyone is the keeper of her own equilibrium. French women enjoy going to market. French women plan meals in advance and think in terms of menus, a list of little dishes, even at home. French women think dining in is as sexy as dining out. French women love to entertain at home. French women care enormously about the presentation of food. It matters to them how you look at it. French women walk everywhere they can. French women take the stairs whenever possible. French women will dress to take out the garbage. You never know. French women are stubborn individuals and don't follow mass movements. French women adore fashion. French women know one can go far with a great haircut, a bottle of champagne, and a divine perfume. French women know l'amour fait maigrir. Love is slimming. French women avoid anything that demands too much effort for too little pleasure. French women love to sit at a cafe and do nothing but enjoy the moment. French women love to laugh. French women eat for pleasure. French women don't diet. French women don't get fat. In the end, the only thing really dividing French and American women is inertia. For there is absolutely no French trick or custom that you can't make your own with a little common sense and attention to your individual needs, strengths and weaknesses, and pleasures. Here's your toughest challenge. Write down everything you eat this week. Don't say to yourself, "I'll remember, I don't need to write it down." Passivity won't launch you on your way. If you can take the first small step of putting pen to paper regularly and get to know what you are putting into your body, you will find yourself already en route. Bon courage, bonne chance, and bon appétit. This is Kate Mazur. What follows is an interview with the author.
The fast food industry has been getting a lot of attention in American media, most recently with films like Super Size Me. Is there a fast food culture in France or abroad in general? Or do you think that fast food is a purely American state of mind?
Fast food is, alas, more than a state of mind. It's a state of affairs. It's there. It's now expanding to most developed countries, including France. You can go to New Zealand, which is one of the purest environmentally conscious countries on Earth, and you will find Kentucky Fried Chicken in many towns. It's a franchise convenience store. In France, you can nowadays find McDonald's everywhere. At the same time people are criticizing it, they are going to it. It's on the Champs-Élysées, and when you hit the provinces and the roundabouts in some towns, you will find them there. That's where kids like to go. They are playgrounds. It's easy for the parents, and that's because women everywhere face the same problems. It's a convenience of the 21st century. Plus, people are lazy. And fast food restaurants are affordable. I've seen in my years of going back and forth, whatever happens in the US 10, 5, and now even less years, it's getting faster, comes here. So fast food culture is increasing in France, in Eastern Europe, and in the Far East. And the problem with overweight that exists in America is on the horizon becoming a problem in these places. Fortunately, in France, the government is reacting fast with school programs and education on nutrition. My point is, you have to understand what you are eating and control your portions. I'm not saying don't ever go to a fast food restaurant. But if you knew what you were putting in your body, you'd probably go less frequently, and you would eat less when you go. You don't need two hamburgers, one is enough, and you can order the small fries.
You have a career that requires you to travel away from home frequently. Do you find it difficult to maintain healthy eating while you're away from home? What advice would you offer professionals like yourself who do struggle to maintain healthy eating habits while on the road?
As I said in the audio program, I have a system that's part of my lifestyle, but I had to develop it because there are always more temptations when you travel. For example, I don't eat plain food. I drink more water. The challenge when you travel is if you're on vacation. There is a tendency to splurge. So there is a before and an after. Business travel is actually easier for me. I'm sitting in meetings all day, okay, but I make sure to take a walk before breakfast and to walk on my way back to the hotel or to home.
Your company, Clico Incorporated, produces very fine wines and champagnes. What is it like to work for a luxury industry like Clico? Do you feel that working in this type of industry has influenced your attitude toward health and diet? Do you find that your colleagues and clients tend to eat more indulgently than the average person?
Well, to work for a luxury company is very special because it's all about image, environment, quality, privileges, setting standards for other people, eating in restaurant, and it's also about eating and drinking wine and combining it with style and etiquette. As my colleagues and clients, do they eat more? Well, they have a greater passion for fine food and wine. They may indulge sometimes, but they know how to balance. It's eating for pleasure. So when we go to a fine restaurant, they don't say, I'm not going to have bread, wine, dessert. This is their time to do it. This is their indulgence moment.
Most people have a strong preference for sweet or salty foods. Which one do you crave more? And how do you satisfy your craving without overdoing it?
Well, of course, as you know from the audio, I crave for sweets. And I really satisfy this craving with the first few bites. These bites are all that count. The palate is satisfied after that. I also try not to have them at home and make them special indulgences at restaurants.
What is the worst mistake about diets?
Well, thinking that they work beyond the short term. If they did, we wouldn't have so many diet books or fat people. Most will help you shed some weight while you are adhering to it, but following a diet isn't fun, and the formulaic approaches are not sustainable for life for most people, so the weight returns.
Isn't it very difficult to act on your advice? To shop at a market, to set the table, and then to cook so fancy? Particularly with regard to single women.
Everyone has to find his or own healthy pattern, and one doesn't have to act on every one of my suggestions. That's the point. We're all different, and we have to find our own way. As a cross-cultural observation, I have pointed out that French women do shop at the market, like to cook, and set a nice table. My point about the market, though, is that you should understand what you're putting into your body. And shopping and cooking teaches you that, and can even be therapeutic after a fashion. Not just single women, but working women do not have the time to shop and cook elaborate meals daily. I don't, so I eat out or eat simply. And there is a range of opportunities for single women. But I understand what I'm eating, and I look forward to the weekends at home to shop and cook. You would be surprised how easy it is to secure quality produce and to prepare it if you want to. In New York City, for example, you can order organic produce, meat, fish, dairy, vegetables, fruit, and dry goods over the internet, and it is delivered to your home the next day. The young people in my office use the service a great deal. That's their marketing. And what they get is fresh and good and probably takes 5 minutes to market for them. And the recipes I share are easily made in less than a half hour. I submit that is a feasible and physiologically and psychologically healthy undertaking for a single or busy woman with a small family.
We hope you've enjoyed this production of French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure, by Mireille Juliano. Text copyright 2005 by Mireille Juliano. Published by arrangement with Random House Audio Publishing Group, a division of Random House Incorporated. Production copyright 2005. Books on tape.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.